Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hello, welcome to the 110th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm Matt Enloe.
And I'm Oren Kaplan, and today we have Bobby Miller on. He is a director that has a feature film that is out by the time you are hearing this podcast. It is called The Cleanse. It premiered at South by Southwest. It has Johnny Galecki and Angelica Houston and a bunch of other awesome cast members. And it is a kind of crazy supernatural fantasy about people that are trying to find themselves and get rid of all the negative stuff in their life.
Yeah, if you like weird puppets and magical realism and comedy and drama kind of all mixed into one, this is your sweet spot. Bobby has a ton of really interesting insights. He's kind of like us in that he started in the internet. He was kind of around for the early, you know, boom of YouTube and figuring out how to make a living and finding an audience online, and kind of parlayed that into a hit Sundance short and then also a feature film. So if you want to follow that path, like I think most of our listeners do, this is a great episode for you.
I really enjoyed hearing all the steps he took to get his movie made, which go beyond writing a script or finding a producer. It's, you know, it's creating a whole package, which is really interesting. But before we talk to him, we want to say thanks to our new patrons. We started a Patreon last week, and we already have a few patrons.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. It's such an awesome thing to see. I know it feels like, it's a couple bucks. It's not a big deal. But like, it really does mean a lot to us, and it really is going to help the show grow in really significant ways. So we just wanted to say thank you, single out a few people who have already become patrons of our Patreon.
Yeah, we got Ryan Moulton, Jonathan Finn Holliday, Nathan Blackwell, Nathan Presley, who Nathan Presley, by the way, is the guy I told you about, Matt. He saw me at Starbucks. He like just heard my voice.
Oh man,
and
double
like,
shout
hey,
out.
Hey, do you have a podcast? I was like, yeah. He's like, I was just listening to it on the way here. Seriously, we are really excited about the podcast and about meeting our fans. And you know, we brought a producer on recently, and we have our editors, and we think that the Patreon is just going to help us be able to focus on this a little bit more and hopefully up our production value and keep making sure we get guests consistently that are good and interesting to you guys.
And also live events. That's kind of the other thing we haven't talked about enough, but like we're aiming to do live events every quarter. So we had a really great, successful one at the beginning of the year, and we want to start bringing those back more regularly. And so that's part of the master plan. We've got a lot of big, exciting stuff happening, and the Patreon is really helping to shift our priorities so that we can think about the bigger things while the show itself is taken care of, and that the people who are helping make it are compensated properly. So thanks, everyone.
Cool. So let's get into it with Bobby Miller.
Hello, Bobby Miller. Welcome, buddy.
Hi. Thanks.
You're on the podcast.
I'm on it.
You did it. So Bobby, I always lump you in my mind with like New York, like Tumblr, internet startup guys. I always imagine you guys are all in the same building.
Just all on the streets.
Just
of
all
New
on
York
the streets.
City.
You're walking here. And you're making internet videos at the same time. So you worked for Next New Networks, which was bought by Google, right?
Yeah.
Doing a show that some listeners, I'm sure, will be familiar with, Indie Mogul, right?
Yes.
Which was kind of like a DIY, like how to make movies in your backyard sort of show that I think inspired a lot of people. And we had Justin Johnson, who was on the show when they relaunched it relatively recently. But so you were in New York, and you made a short film called Tub, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of was your breakout you were kind of working in the internet and this was kind of like your first bona fide festival hit. Tell us about Tub.
So Tub is about a guy who jerks off in the shower and accidentally impregnates his bathtub. So it was slightly different than the stuff I was doing at Indie Mogul.
Sure.
Because I started, I was like an on-screen personality.
Sure, yeah, know? Yeah. You were like hosting.
Yeah.
You were like, hey kids, this is how you show someone to how to blow your head off or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, here's
like,
how to blow your head off.
With a watermelon and some paint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is like the classic BTS shot, right?
Yeah.
We're going to shoot him with the gun and then we're going to blow up a watermelon.
Yeah.
We're going to cut those two things together. Well, anyway, back to
yes.
you. So you made Tub while so you were like, at Indie Mogul.
Yeah. And where did that premiere?
And wait, when we say made, you like wrote and directed it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And that went to Sundance.
Did you go to film school?
I did. I went to Columbia grad school in New York.
So you went to Columbia and you made this weird movie that was in Sundance.
But was it like a thesis film or was it just on your own?
I did it for the love of the game, really. I didn't have to because I just needed to make to write features to graduate because I chose the like screenwriting concentration. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just did it because I wanted to.
Were you in school when you made it though?
I did. Yeah.
Oh, I gotcha. Cool. That's great. So were you doing the next new stuff while you were in school as well?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a good gig. That's
yeah. Excellent. No, it's great because I was just shooting these little web shows in my apartment and going to, you know, film school.
How did you get that job?
Justin Johnson.
Oh,
we were
God.
Internet buddies who made videos and he was like, hey, you're funny. I'm in New York now. I'm working at Next New. Why don't you come work over here?
Wow.
It was that simple. That was like almost pre-YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. The internet was a fun time back then. It was like,
yeah.
You
kind of knew everyone that
right.
was making videos
like,
for
oh,
the internet.
There's seven people making funny videos.
Yeah.
Cool. So what happened after Tub? You got into Sundance. That pretty much means you've made it, right?
That means you made it. You get a three-picture
sure.
deal.
You're rich. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Rich. The gates of Hollywood just opened to you. the reality is I moved out here.
To L.A.
Moved to Los Angeles. Thought I could do that next new network job. It didn't pan out and I lost my job. I was unemployed for the first like 6 months out here. I didn't have a car and went on general meetings, mm-hmm. you know,
just like you were looking for the subway for like
yeah.
2 months.
I was like, I know there's a subway here. Right.
Yeah.
And just went on a bunch of general meetings where they were like, we really like Tub. And, you know, this new script is really weird. It's not for us. So that
was
like a year and a half.
This was Cleanse that you were shopping.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So, yeah, it was a lot of that.
How did you get those meetings?
Actually, a manager assistant saw Tub at Sundance. Mm-hmm. And then after like months of emails back and forth, she was like, hey, I'm a manager now. And I was like, cool. I happen to need one.
Yeah.
And that's how that happened.
It's pretty amazing how much that happened. Like, it's like so obvious that it would happen, but it's like kind of surprising sometimes when it does happen because you're like, well, the manager won't return my calls, but the assistant will talk to me.
Yeah.
And then the assistant becomes the manager.
Yeah,
so
sure.
So it's like...
Well, and the assistants are the hungry people, right? Like a manager more or less has their roster already. So like they're not looking for more people. They're just trying to get... the people on their roster jobs already. So it's like, who's the next person who...
There's kind of two types of managers. There's the ones with assistants and the ones without assistants. The ones without assistants are pretty hungry too.
Yeah.
But yeah, if your manager has an assistant, then be nice to the assistant, obviously.
So you were taking generals, right?
Yes.
And you would come
in... You're broke, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd come in with the script?
So I think my critical error was I didn't have a script soon as I moved out to Los Angeles. It was like, hey, I have this idea for The Cleanse. And, mm-hmm. and it was... So it was a couple months until the script was ready.
Can you tell us, like, how would you pitch the idea? What's the idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was just telling people it's about a group of people go on this retreat to cleanse themselves. And, you know, the drink that they drink to do that, to get rid of these toxins, you know, makes them sick. And they vomit up creatures that represent all the negative aspects of themselves. And that was my elevator pitch.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, of course, they want to read that. They don't necessarily want to make that.
Right.
And do they ask you, I'm assuming the first question is like, is that really happening or are they imagining it? Is it like a, right. a spiritual?
Yeah. Some people ask that. I mean,
well, my first question was like, is this like a ayahuasca thing? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it a drug trip thing?
Well, it's weird.
Which is an annoying question.
I didn't even know about that until we were literally in pre-production.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm so dumb and naive with drugs. I was like, what's an ayahuasca thing? Yeah. So I didn't even know about it until like...
While we're young, what hadn't come out yet, basically.
That's yes. Like, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The, yeah, yeah.
Togetherness also had a pretty good ayahuasca.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Episode. I think Mad Men, too, right?
Is that right? Oh, man.
Yeah. It's going around.
Fun. Yeah. It's the cool thing to put in your movies.
Well, so let me ask you a question because this is something I'm dealing with now. So you had made Tub, you got the Sundance thing, you got a manager pretty much from it. You moved to LA. You have an idea for a movie. I'm assuming you have like a lot of ideas for a lot of movies. Like, how do you choose which one to focus on?
I didn't have that problem because it was just like it's this movie,
and you felt like I had the opposite
problem. Yeah, in fact, I remember my manager, the same manager, after a year and a half of general meetings, she was just like, "It's dead. Just move on."
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And so I wrote other things, but I was like, this is garbage. This isn't what I want to do. And it was so sad. I would go back to the cleanse script on a PDF and be like, oh, I really like that yeah, scene.
Sure. You know? Wait, it's like late one night and you're like,
yeah, let me stalking just pull its it
Facebook
up.
Page.
So what drew you to it? Or like what made you keep coming back to that idea?
I mean, for me, you know, as absurd as what I just said was, like in terms of the plot, you know, the creature stuff, for me, what kept bringing me back was the fact that people who do go on these cleanses take it very seriously and take it as if like, if I can just get through these 10 days, I can get my life together. I can restart my life. And I thought that was really powerful. And I read like diary entries from people who have gone through it. And I was like, yeah, we can, there's a lot of fun to be had here, but there's also something that I think could be kind of personal. And that's what kept bringing me back. And I kept thinking about the ending, especially the same thing with Tub. It's the endings that always are like, I got to do this somehow.
So you had this perfect ending.
Well, I don't know if it's perfect, but it like haunted me. Like I need to see that. So yeah,
that's a really good way to get people to watch your movie, right?
The ending haunted me.
Yeah.
Got to stick with it.
Yeah. Hey, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I get to use that more.
I don't know. Endings to me are so hard. And so I guess if you do have kind of something that you're really excited about, it's probably easier to write.
Yeah. I think it's also a real gift to know that which one is the one, you know. I think like, of course you have like other jobs and you have to entertain other ideas and things, but like if you have the luck and the conviction of being drawn back to a project over and over again, that's a real gift, right? You know, because like it's easy to get lost in other ideas or to abandon something because like people don't like it. To like have the faith in that idea is really special.
Yeah. Pretty much every month I'm like, Matt, I'm really excited about this project I'm working on. And I like tell them all about it and I pitch it to everyone and I get so excited. And then like a week later, I just have a different idea that I'm like more excited about. And I think that's like the classic person that doesn't get anything done in Hollywood.
Well, I don't know. I think there's also kind of a naive thing about it for me. Like it being the first feature, it was just like, I didn't think about how hard it was to get made or anything like that. I was just like, well, this has to be the first. Like now I have that problem now more where I'm like, what do people want?
Yeah, yeah.
What can I actually get made?
Right. Even when you know that you shouldn't be thinking about that, you like can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
Right? Because it gets to be this situation where it's more about the pitch than about the script, right?
Yeah.
Because it's easier to get people that will listen to your pitch than your script. And so you start like working on the pitch, at least for me, right? Because that's the marketing angle, right?
Yeah.
Like, how can I sell this in like 20 minutes when I'm talking to someone?
Yeah, yeah.
So
how did you make that next big step, right? So you have this idea, you like the script very much. Everyone's told you no. Your manager has been like, this is a bad idea.
Wait, but everyone, like you've gone to basically like every studio and production company in town and they've all turned it down?
I mean, sure.
Effectively, right? Effectively. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, because it's a strange movie.
Sure. Yeah. Spoiler alert, you got the movie made, right?
Yeah. So, no, it ended up working out.
Yeah. So I want to know, because I think that people will really be excited by this. Everyone's got a weird idea that, like, maybe they're afraid people are going to say no to, and they haven't even had the chance to, like, show it to anyone. So you overcame that. What was that next step? How did you make that leap?
So here's what happened is I ended up getting an agent, and he casually was like, you should meet Jordan Horowitz. Mm-hmm. And then he said to, like, Jordan, like, there's a script he has. You probably won't like it. Like, that's literally famously what he said to Jordan.
Wait, sorry. How did you get the agent?
That happened on a general meeting where it was like...
Manager set you up with them.
I was a general meeting with, like, a junior executive, and they were just like, oh, I think you would like so-and-so as an agent. Are you looking for an agent? I was like, oh, yeah, I am. Spoiler alert, I don't have any reps right now. Oh, so we can get to that later.
Yeah, I think that's helpful, too.
But, yeah, it was something that I thought was dead. It got to Jordan. He flipped over it, like, everyone who
and
read
who
it.
Who is there. Jordan?
So Jordan produced La La Land. You may have heard of it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jordan was an internet meme for a little while for losing/winning for La La Land producing.
Uh-huh.
He was the one that flipped it around and was like,
all right, it's not we us, love guys. Moonlight. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Jordan read it. He flipped over it. And he, you know... He understood, like, he watched The Brood, like, he watched Cronenberg films, like, his very encyclopedic film mind. And so he understood all these things I was drawing from and just dug it. And I was like, wait, before you read that script again, let me read it, because I haven't read it in a year. Everyone told me it's done. Let me read it, because I probably have notes now. So we both read it. I came with my notes. He came with his notes. And we had, like, the same issues. And so we worked on it for about a year, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were rewriting and sending him, you were writing it, and he was just giving you notes.
Yeah.
And had he optioned it or anything like that? Was there any money in
there
between?
There was no money for me.
Which is okay, right? Like, again.
I don't... Does that happen? Do you get paid for things?
Sometimes people get paid for things.
I've heard it happens.
I think...
Never seen it.
The flip side is sometimes people will be like, well, they didn't even want to option it, or we didn't have any paperwork or anything. This isn't real.
Well, the reality is if somebody comes and offers to buy the script from you while you're working with him on it, you could sell it, right?
Yeah,
Right, and if he options it, you can't.
Right.
But since you guys... Effectively, a lot of people told you it's dead.
Right.
And this one person was interested in it. He probably wasn't as scared of losing it.
Yeah, he was like a beacon of light.
Right.
In the darkness.
My point is just, like, it's kind of all gut level in terms of, like, is this real or isn't this? Like, this movie, it's awesome that it got made, but it would have been feasible for that it just didn't go anywhere. And that's okay. Like, sometimes you're going to waste time on something that doesn't actually pan out, but, like, that doesn't mean that it'll always not pan out.
Yeah. And I mean, at that point, Jordan had made a few films. Sure. So it was like, oh, he's a real producer.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
let me ask you,
he's not some guy in a back alley, like, hey, you got any movies?
Hey, what's that weird script you got?
Just cause I think it would be interesting to our listeners. So he saw the script and he flipped over it, but did he also see Tub? Like, did he know who you were as a filmmaker also?
He saw it. I think my agent sent Tub with the script, so he saw both of the things. Yeah.
So that's kind of the door that opens the door, and then you can kind of.
For sure. Yeah. And I think for what I did with Tub and the cleanse, like, just having a visual thing to show the tone that you're going after.
Yeah, because they are companion pieces in a lot of ways.
For sure.
Okay. So then once he came along, I imagine that's when things start to fall into place.
Yeah, I mean, once we both were good with the script, it started getting out to actors, and then eventually, I have a crazy theory of how this movie actually got going.
Love it.
We went to some actors at an agency that I wasn't at the time, and you know the Vine app? Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Fine.
I hear they might be bringing it back, actually.
Say what?
Yeah.
It was only dead for 7 seconds. Oh. 9 seconds? What's that?
Six, yes. I think. So anyways, I did a joke Kickstarter for Vine, which is 6-second videos, and I tried to raise money for $89 because I wanted an iPhone attachment to go on. I was like, I need to make Vine films. And I didn't think Kickstarter would approve this clearly joke Kickstarter. They did. IndieWire wrote an article about it. The guy asked me, you know, what would you like to add anything? I was like, could you just say that I've been trying to make this feature just at the very end? So he does it. That weekend, someone at WME says, hey, what's the deal with this feature script? And I said, I don't know, but I'm repped at WME. Why don't you ask my guys? And then I swear to you, that next week it was talked about in the company meeting, and all of a sudden I'm meeting all these actors. But it was
that makes sense, yeah. Actually, and is totally bonkers. But that's how that shit works. That's insane.
And wow. And it was a dumb video I made at 2 a.m. that my wife, then girlfriend, was just like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "It's funny, I think." You know, like
that is so excellent.
I'm pretty positive because we couldn't get any movement at my own agency for some reason.
But so Jordan was already attached at this point. And you were trying to attach cast.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. So anytime I get pressed, I should just have them add to the end.
I was just like, yeah, could you just like that?
He's working on a movie.
My agent definitely doesn't listen to this show, but he would hate me for saying this. But I think that the way to manipulate agencies in general is to make them jealous of each other. Like if they are worried that they're missing out, like, oh fuck, this IndieWire article and they're talking about this movie and we rep this guy, what the fuck, like let's get this happening. Like there's got to be a little bit of blood in the water and then they get into it. But you can't, it's hard to manufacture it yourself sometimes. Mm-hmm. You can, like you said, you can email this guy like 80,000 times and be like, hey, let's make this movie happen. But like they've got to be nervous that someone else is going to scoop them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And make them look bad, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So yeah. Get an agent, make them look bad. Get your movie made.
There you go. So then that's how you started attaching people, basically.
Yeah. I mean, once it got to actors, they were like, what the fuck is this? I need to meet the person who wrote this.
Wait, was there... So did you know how much money you were going to spend making it at that point?
I mean, we had a loose idea in our mind of like what we wanted to make it for.
Can you say what your budget was?
I don't think I can.
I don't think your specific budget is important, but what is, from my experience, is interesting is that to attach actors, there's a difference between saying, hey, we're making a $500,000 movie, can you be in it for scale? Or we're making a $5 million movie, we're going to offer you $1 million, you know, like, can you talk to us?
I mean, as far as I know, no one was getting $1 million on this, but it was, I mean, it was union. And
like, are you giving actors offers and then asking them to read the script? Or are you asking them to read?
I honestly don't even know.
Is what you're asking, really, right?
Yeah, I guess a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, I think a lot of people that are making a movie are like, well, if an actor just got my script, I'd be set, you know? Like, if I could just get Amy Adams to read this script and she'd love it and we could make it. But there's, like, so many other steps that you have to go through before that happens, right?
You know, I don't know a lot about what happened. I believe that it
How
was...
How great is that, huh?
Yeah. I didn't want to know because it would probably make me sad what was actually...
Well, do you have any idea how they pitched you? Or are they like, hey, this is Bobby Miller. He's a Sundance... He had a film at Sundance... Jordan Horowitz read his script and is attached, and they're looking to cast actors.
I should say one thing that we did do was when Johnny became attached, we shot a little like teaser.
And Johnny Galecki is the lead.
Johnny Galecki is the lead.
From Roseanne.
Yes. From Roseanne, yeah.
And Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, that's true. I love Christmas Vacation.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Watch it so many, probably seen it more than anything.
So Johnny Galecki. So Johnny you Galecki. Attached him first.
Yes.
And then you teamed up with him to make a presentation to attach the rest of
the
cast?
Yeah, we basically shot a scene in the movie with Johnny and his creature, kind of the first big scene with them. And we shot it in a cabin. And that, plus the script, plus Tub, But really that teaser, I mean, we would go around to financiers and we'd open up the laptop and play it and we'd see like grown adults like just get little smiles on their face when the creature came up and we were like, oh, this is works. Why you do that. This oh, is why you make a little sample thing like that.
That's really
wait,
interesting.
Wait, so I have so many questions about unpacking this. Was there a treatment that went along with this too, like a visual presentation?
Yeah. There was a director's lookbook or whatever, and I had hired some artists who I found online to do paintings of all the creatures. Mm-hmm. So I had a pretty detailed, you know, I feel like with that and the short, you know, people got it, understood what the hell I was doing.
And what else was it? So you had paintings of the creatures, then you have like a tone book or
yeah. Oh, and there was a tone reel. I did a lot of stuff, you know, right. And the
I think that this is the thing that a lot of people are missing where they're like, I got the script and I can't attach anyone. And it's like, well, the script is just like one ingredient in this cocktail of selling your movie to
yeah.
people.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, tone reel, lookbook, the sample scene, and the script.
And was the scene shot in a way where it could be used in the final movie or was it just for the pitch?
I think it was just for the pitch, because it was also the first time we were messing around with the creature. The creature design changed slightly.
Mm-hmm. And who paid for that scene to be shot?
I think I could say this. I mean, Johnny put up money to shoot the scene.
Wow.
Yeah. Good. I mean, he was a producer on the movie, you know. Oh.
Was that at that, when you meet with him to cast him, is it with the understanding that maybe he'll be interested in producing as well?
It was something that he came to us with initially. Oh,
Wow.
He was just super. I mean,
that
we had
very cool.
We had like a very surreal, almost first date experience where we went on a walk for like 2 hours and talked about the movie. So it was very strong, like bond when we met.
You were his Darlene.
Yeah.
Wait, so yeah. How did you, sorry, I'm like really getting into the minutia here, but how sure. did you? You have a meeting with Johnny and you're like, hey, do you want to just like walk around the block? You want to get out of here?
I think he said it, honestly. I was following his lead.
Yeah, sure. Because, I mean, like, look, Big Bang Theory is kind of the biggest show on TV.
Yeah.
Not kind of. No,
I think it is.
In a very literal sense it is. Yeah. So, like.
Were you nervous at all?
I mean, it was so exciting, you know, because like I said, it's a movie that everyone told you was dead. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're meeting all these actors. So, I mean, I was a little nervous, but it was just a really, really exciting time.
Did you tell him that you saw Christmas Vacation a ton of times? Like, did you tell him that you were a fan of, like, weird things?
Well, it's weird. I don't lead with that stuff. I don't.
It's not weird.
Weird? No, it's not weird at all. Yeah, because you don't want to come on too strong. You don't want to be like, right. Oh, my God, I love you in this weird thing.
Right.
But also, that's maybe the reason that you were drawn to him, right?
Yeah. And I think for him, it's like, yeah, he's on the biggest show. Like, he was drawn to this weird story, you know? And,
yeah.
and
that, he had and, read the script already when he agreed to meet with you.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's a really great guy and someone who doesn't need to do this movie. Like, right. Clearly yeah, sure. doesn't need and, to do a movie
Yeah, when
like
I
this.
Said nervous, I don't mean because he's like a celebrity. I mean because a lot of your eggs are in his basket, right? Like, you need him to like you in order for this movie to happen.
Well, I mean, not or maybe to sound not. Like a jerk, but like I met a lot of actors. Like, it was like I said, it was like pretty surreal.
Is there like an area in LA where you can just see directors and actors walking around the block?
Yeah. No. Los Feliz.
Well, actually,
where did you go? I'm curious. Yeah.
Where did I go?
Yeah. Like, what part of town?
I was told that I needed to find a place in like West Hollywood to meet actors.
Oh, really?
Because so sometimes I would suggest like Los Feliz, and they'd be like, "Well, that's not going to work for so and so."
Tom Cruise.
So yeah. What's your spot? Like, hey, meet me at.
It was like Los Feliz Cafe. I met a few people.
Oh, really?
Or Cafe Los Feliz?
Yeah,
I
Cafe
get them
Los
mixed
Feliz.
Up.
That's in West Hollywood.
No, that's the one that I would always try to get people to go to. And
that
then,
place is great. So did you feel like if Johnny wasn't into your movie, you felt like there were other people who could get your movie made that wanted to do it, basically?
Yeah.
Man, how special is that?
It was a good time. It was a good time to be alive.
I mean, it sounds like the script is pretty good, right? Like people read it and they get excited about it.
I think so. I think so. I mean, and we were able to get just like, it just kind of went across the board, like the production designer who worked on all these big movies, mm-hmm. like what's it called? The Alien movie. Name an alien thing.
Alien.
Guardians of the Galaxy. No.
But like big studio movies, and so he was attracted to do something weird that he could just kind of get weird on.
Yeah, I bet a production designer would be super excited about your movie.
Yeah.
How many creatures are in there?
Well, there's several stages of creatures. Mm-hmm. So there was different puppets for each stages. I don't know. Let's say 6 or 7.
And were they all like covered with slime and stuff like that?
A lot of KY jelly up in this piece. Mm. Yeah.
Any like strawberry jam or anything like that?
No, nothing. They never surprised me with that.
Well, cool, man. That's an incredible situation. So you get Johnny. You guys have this little love affair. You guys go for a long walk through West Hollywood. Angelica Houston is in this movie too. Like,
but we know it's the same story as Johnny. Like, now he's got the sizzle. He's got this amazing package. He's got any actor he wants.
Once you get Johnny, you're like, hey, let me ask an icon to be in the movie as well.
Sure. Yeah.
Bobby's afraid it's okay if it was easy for you once you got the ball.
Yeah. No, that's great.
I would say the only role that was hard was the Oliver Platt role, mm-hmm. because they wanted to take shots at like. And no offense to Oliver Platt, but like big, you know, because it is a role that you could kind of glide in for a couple of days and glide out.
Like the Morgan Freeman type of.
So they, you know, the production company wanted to take all these giant shots at kind of big names like that. And so that was the only kind of hard part. But
well, so this is your first feature, right?
Yes.
How much of a final say do you have about this cast?
Not the final say.
But they obviously have like a, they don't just want great performances and great characters, but they also want marketability.
Yeah.
But do they say like, here's the three people we want to go out to. Who do you like most? Or is it a little more?
I mean, it was a mix. I would say for certain roles, you know, it all came from the agency, right? So the agency would send like, here's what we, you know, here's our folks.
So when and where did you shoot?
We shot in Vancouver and, a couple years ago in the woods of Vancouver.
And it's just coming out now.
Yeah.
So you shot before La La Land Oscar thing?
Yeah. It's been a long journey, guys.
Yeah. So
as easy as it sounds, it still was a long journey.
Yeah. Yeah. We're doing the fast forward version.
I'm giving
of it,
you the breezy version, but it was rough stuff.
So then tell us a moment where it was maybe at its roughest. Can you talk about like...
Did it ever almost all fall apart?
Yeah. I mean, I was told by Jordan after we wrapped, he was like, by the way, this movie almost fell completely apart like 3 days before we started shooting. Like, and I was like, thank you for telling me this now, you know, as
Did
we were wrapped.
Did he explain how and why?
He didn't get into the nitty gritty. But I think it's like, you know, this arbitrary value system that they place on actors and stuff, mm-hmm. I think has a lot to do with it, where like some, I don't know how this works, some bookkeeper is like, this doesn't add up. This doesn't, you know, I'm crunching the numbers now. And,
right.
You know, it's so such an arbitrary system.
Yeah. I always joke that I've got a movie that my wife and I are working on that like we tried to attach some people all from a similar show, and I was like, oh, if the head of marketing at this company just was a fan of that show, we'd be wrapped already.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, have you heard of this person or not, basically, is kind of what it boils down to. It feels more arbitrary than you want it to be. Like, you want there to be like an Excel spreadsheet that we can all just download and look
at. Yeah, or like the IMDb star meter.
Yeah, exactly.
Something. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
So, okay, like, yeah, this person's 10,000, you know,
if I was in marketing
or whatever, and it's under 50,000, we got a movie, you know, that'd be great.
Yeah. We talked with the casting director and she was like, yeah, you know, I think it was like Will Ferrell or something. They couldn't get a movie made with him. And then like 2 months later, it was totally fine. And it's just like, there's no real hard and fast rules.
Right. I was going to say, if I was in marketing, and it's easy to say since I'm not in marketing, but I feel like the most important thing for me would be like, what does the trailer look like?
Yeah.
You know, like, how does this story, is this story captivating in like 2 minutes? Right. And then can we get ideally recognizable people? But, you know, when you start building a cast of like all these recognizable people, like doesn't matter if you have two or seven, like right. I don't know that that right. makes a difference.
Yeah. Do two sort of famous people equal one famous person?
No. See, I think know. One famous yeah. person is the best.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless they're not that famous, in which case you need two famous people.
Yeah. Well, cool. So you shot in Vancouver. How many days did you shoot for?
I think it was like 19 and a half days. Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, it sure is.
And you were doing all this creature stuff.
Yeah.
And that was like puppets. So it was mainly practical.
Yeah. Puppets, animatronics. There's a man in suit type rig. Fun.
That's exciting.
It's just full out anything 80s, 90s practical effect movie. Yeah. Like we were using it in this.
And a little arts and crafts, I like to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you inspired by those movies? Like, did you watch?
Yeah.
Total Recall or something. And like,
I mean, Gremlins, Beetlejuice, E.T. And then as I got older, Cronenberg and John Carpenter. Yeah. I got weirder sure. and more adult.
Was there ever a moment on set where you're like, this just doesn't look creepy enough, or it's not scary enough, or it's not, or it just feels too fake?
I don't know, because here's the thing is we had a DP who had shot all these genre films for like Blumhouse. So this guy was like my rock. And so even if it didn't look right in real life, mm-hmm. which it really never was that problem, he could light the hell out of it. So like, you know, mm-hmm. he can make up for it. But, I mean, if you take anything from this movie, if you don't like the story, if you don't like anything, the effects are really good. I'm really proud of the creatures in the movie. And
I'm only asking because I've had mixed experiences in the same field. Like, how much did you get to see them before the actual shoot and give notes and get to modify them and test things out? Or was it a lot of like, okay, let's bring the creature out and hope it looks right?
Yeah, it was, there was some stuff I saw ahead of time and then others where it was like day of shoot, this is what it looks like. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let me change how I'm going to shoot this scene then.
It was supposed to be 2 feet tall, not two yeah. inches tall, but hey, we'll make it work.
Stuff like that for sure. And it's funny, no matter what, I feel like that always happens. Like right. no matter what you do. And I begged, I was like, please, I want to do like camera tests and things. Yeah, right. You're not going to get sure. a camera test of your creatures.
Right. I mean, you had directed, I'm assuming other stuff other than Tub. Obviously you did all this stuff at Indie Mogul, but you had directed a lot of days on set before this movie. But being that it was your first feature.
Actually, what was your experience in between Tub and Cleanse? Like, how were you directing frequently, or like?
I mean, it was all really DIY digital stuff. So like BuzzFeed, it was, you make two videos a week. You are every crew member. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just thrilled to have a monitor on set. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, right. that's where I was coming out of. Like,
so you're not doing a ton of like stuff where you had a crew of any size, basically. No.
Yeah. I mean, Tub was really it. I couldn't get into commercials. I couldn't get into anything where there was like a crew.
Like yeah. you tried to get into commercials?
I tried and everyone was like, you can't. That was their advice, the commercial agencies. They're like, yeah, you can't unless you make commercials. I was like, well, how do I make commercials? It was just like a never ending loop. Sure.
These spec commercials is the answer, yeah. unfortunately.
Oh, well, then they were like, well, people don't, that's not
something.
They
don't really like it anymore.
Yeah, because it doesn't show that you can work with a client if you're just doing a spec commercial. I was like, all right, never mind.
Well, you're supposed to make a spec commercial that no one would guess is a spec commercial.
Well, so hold on real quick. So you go from not really having a ton of crews into shooting a feature film with a full crew and a monitor and all the stuff that you've always dreamt of and animatronic teams and stuff like that. Like
famous people.
What's a thing that you wish you had known at the beginning of that shoot?
My honest answer is, I think whenever you're presented, like you're constantly presented with problems every day. Like mm-hmm. you can't shoot this, you can't shoot that. And a lot of the times my attitude was always like, I'll work around. I'll be, you know, I'm the mm-hmm. good boy. I'm going to work around in this box. And I think sometimes you just have to say, no, I can't. No, we have to do it this way.
Did you know looking back, did you know the times where you should have said, like, could you tell that you were making the wrong decision and when you were a good boy anyway?
It was really just kind of making your days, right? Mm-hmm. So there was stuff, and luckily there's like a silver lining to this because we ended up getting pickup days mm-hmm. to fix some of these things. But it was, yeah, you're leaving a scene and you're like, oof, I don't know if I got everything.
Yeah.
And that happened a few times.
And how frequently had you actually gotten it and everything was fine relative to?
Never. No. No,
sure. I mean, that would be an okay answer.
I mean, for the most part, everything, you know, we got the scenes, but it was just stuff where it's like,
right.
you I know, mean, 19 and a half days, half of the movie is practical effects with a company that had never worked with practical effects. Like my AD on the first day was like, why are these effects taking so long? And I'm like, dude, they take like three times as long yeah. as human beings.
Yeah, because there's not right. a computer who's going to fix it later.
Yeah.
But as a person who's directed and edited and done so many videos, you're at this point, regardless of like what the budget is or anything, you're a person that has like a good idea of whether you have the pieces for the scene to work or like, you know, you can always play out the whole scene in a wide shot, but that might not be what you want.
Yeah. And so. I think for me, the stuff, that I'm critical of myself when I see the movie is like, oh, there's stuff where I did coverage here. Mm-hmm. And everything else in the movie is like very measured moving shots and stuff like that. And so I see that as like, as a second time out, I would try to figure that out on my feet a little better.
You mean
I'm not being critical of the film. Go see the movie.
Sure. But dude, the ending is horror.
It just haunts.
It's haunting.
It's haunting. But these are the lessons people want to know. So yeah. you're saying you defaulted to standard coverage sometimes and you wish
yeah.
you hadn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically.
Because when you're up against it, it's like, I need to come out of here with a scene. I can't. Right.
And by the way, you know that most people that watch the movie don't care
if you played it
in a wide shot.
No one cares.
Over.
Literally, no one cares.
Right.
Literally no one cares.
Did you see Project Greenlight? We talk about this all the time, but do you remember the newest season? He did reshoots and he really fought to reshoot this one shot because it was like a little overexposed. And they're like,
Was this the guy who chose film over? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They're like, your whole movie doesn't work. Do you not want to shoot a scene that fixes the
Bobby
story?
And I are on the same team on this conversation.
Yeah. When it was like, you could shoot on film or you could have days, I was like, you pick days. You always pick days.
Right.
You always pick days.
But that's a guy that pushed back on his producers.
Yeah, in the wrong direction.
So that's what I mean. Like, did you try to watch that movie?
Yeah, it's not amazing.
Yes.
But I actually thought the season of Project Greenlight was really good.
Oh, the season is great.
Yeah.
Because it is the classic director versus producer relationship just playing out in front of you. And yes, those relationships can be constructive and positive also, but it just shows you how the business of film and the art of film are just like always working against each other.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect example. I don't know. I really loved it.
Yeah.
Before we end, any other like kind of good lessons from, from the shoot?
Travel back in time and tell young Bobby Miller 16 years ago when you first started this movie.
16 years ago, the light was still in my eyes. Any other lessons? Just have fun out there, you know? No, I don't know. I don't know if I have any. I mean, it's really, you have to, it's all cliche stuff, but no, it's man, like, you it's have okay. to, you have to trust your gut and you have to pick your battles. And my whole thing was like, there was a joke that the effects person started of like, is there anything that could get Bobby to actually like raise his voice? Mm-hmm. Because I was like a gentle lamb on set, you know? And I think my takeaway would be,
maybe raise your voice.
Maybe raise your voice.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Because I think that, I don't want to speak for Oren, but I think it's probably true. We both are in that same position of like, there's a common thread in filmmakers of like being good kids.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're A students, like we do a good job and, you know, we want to, you know, follow the rules to, or for some reason, you don't want to ruffle feathers. You'll like work around things. You'll make it work. Yeah. Right. there's like a little bit of that in everybody, I think. And so it's interesting to learn your own limits of like when you need to step up and say, hey, this is how I want to do it. And I want to be a monster for a second if that's what it takes.
Well, yeah. You just have to be okay with not everyone liking you all the time.
Yeah.
Probably one of my best moments of my career was I was shooting my first feature. We were like halfway through. We were shooting into high school with like all these extras. And we'd finished shooting the scene and the character just walked out of the scene. And we'd gotten like a, you know, wide of him walking out. And I just wanted like a, you know, slow motion, leading shot looking back at him as he's walking out. And it's like, he's not doing anything. He's just walking out and we mm-hmm. see.
You've got it. The scene is covered already, yeah. Basically.
And the AD is like, no, we can't. We're way over. We're paying overtime. We got to go. I'm like, can I just get this one shot? And he's like, no, we can't. And I'm like, dude, let's just do one shot. And, you know, I'm like motioning to the DP while I'm talking to the AD to start getting
you're
played.
Talking with
the
yeah,
and he's like, the AD is like pissed at me because I'm like kind of going around him. And I'm like, okay, well, we're pretty much set up. Let's ready and action. And of course, nothing's in focus and it's horrible. And the AD is like, that's it. We're done. We're done. I'm like, no, we're not done. You know, and I fought whatever. And I didn't even know if the shot worked. And it was kind of dark and out of focus and wasn't really lit right. And the people in the background aren't really doing the right thing. But we got it. And it's in the movie. And then at the first test screening, the AD came to me and he's like, hey, yeah, I think that shot really helps that scene a lot. You know?
I
was like, yeah. Like, because on set, everyone was against me. The DP was on my side, which I think is an advantage. And when you have that, it's like, it's better than being all alone, but like the whole crew was against me.
Yeah.
All the extras were against. Like everyone was like.
Even the extras?
Well, yeah, because like, they wanted to go home. Yeah. And the AD had worked on a million movies before. Yeah. So it's like, and everyone knew that it was my first movie. So I just kind of felt.
That's the other thing is you're surrounded by people who've all made movies mm-hmm. and you're like, well, they must know best, right? Sometimes they don't.
Sometimes they don't.
Yeah, and by the way, also if that shot didn't make it into the movie, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't have shot it. It just means that I wasted everyone's time.
Yeah.
Right.
And you waste people's time constantly. Like most shots don't make it into the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like you just have to get over that idea. Like I had an AD once tell me that you have to ask people, you have to get used to asking people to do things they don't want to do.
Yeah.
That's most of making movies. You know? Yeah. Like they'd all be in bed. Like if you know, they'd be like, oh yeah, I'll just hang out and eat chips and have like a 3-hour lunch if like we allowed them to, but that's not the way the job works, you know?
Yeah. On that same movie, I had this idea to do all these like closed frame shots, you know, where like, it's like a profile shot, but instead of like leaving space open in front of the actor, mm-hmm. you leave it behind the actor. So they're kind of really close to the edge of frame, looking at the edge of frame. And I was like, this is so representative of the character. They're so alone. It's like no one is with them. They're closed in. And I shot some version of that shot in almost every scene. And like literally like the first scene that we used it in, my wife saw, she's like, oh, that's weird. And I was like, well, it's kind of like, look, we did a matching thing on the other side. And she's like, yeah, that's also weird. And she just like kept thinking it was weird. And I just ended up not using one of those shots. But we spent a ton of time shooting them. So, you know. That's just how it is. Probably would have won Sundance if I would have kept those in.
Yeah.
Damn it, wife. Well, cool. What's next for you?
Well, I don't know. I've been just writing a lot. I have two TV things and a feature, and hopefully people will want to read them. That's my hope.
Yeah, that's exciting.
And do you feel like the people you worked with, Johnny and Angelica and Jordan and your reps, I guess maybe not your reps. But do you think, are they now resources for you going forward for making more things?
I don't know. That's my honest answer. And my rep ended up leaving. I switched agencies. I followed him over to an agency. He left and now I don't have a rep. So I was like, that's cool.
Could get any rep, right? Since you're in this kind of great moment. Your movie's
you
about
to come
out. You would
think so. You would think that.
Have you tried?
Have I tried mm-hmm. to contact rep? Well, I listened to your podcast.
Oh, good.
About reps. And I was like, oh, I wish I listened to that beforehand because I wouldn't have emailed any reps because no one will email you back.
Sure. Well, the good news is, like, you can still go in cold, right? Like, they didn't even read it in the first place. So it's like, you can still get an intro from someone or something.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it'll be like, oh boy, Bobby again.
Oh, you know? This guy.
Yeah. He won't ever stop.
Trying to ghost this dude.
Yeah.
Well, how's the movie being released? There's a theatrical?
Yeah, it's limited theaters in the U.S., like 10 theaters, and on the same day, May 4th, you can also get it on the usual iTunes, Amazon, sure. on-demand, cable.
So day and date, VOD, and theatrical.
Yep.
Cool.
And it's called The Cleanse.
It's called The Cleanse.
Cool. So people can find it pretty much anywhere movies can be found.
If you go to The Cleanse Film or letsgetpure.com. They both go to the same thing. And if you see the movie, you'll understand what letsgetpure.com is all about.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you can check it out. Maybe you get to see it theatrically. If not, you can see it on iTunes or Amazon or all the
just
places.
See it. You know, it doesn't matter anymore. Just see it any place you can.
Yeah. If you want to see, especially if you want to see an example of a movie that really ends well.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
got a haunting ending.
I think. I don't know.
No,
find
I think,
out.
And yeah, email us or tweet at us if you disagree about just let us know what you thought of the ending.
Yeah, let us know. And also, the trailer will be on the justshootitpod.com, so you can check that out and you can decide whether or not you want to see the movie. I'm sure after seeing the trailer, you'll be like, oh shit, I got to check this out. You've learned so much from Bobby. I think everyone's going to go check it out. I hope. Let us know.
So, before we end, we usually end our show with a segment called Unpaid Endorsements.
Unpaid Endorsements!
You got something, Matt?
Yeah, I've got three, actually. First off is... Do you guys remember a few months back, there, like, the Ultimate Road Trip went viral? Do you guys remember this? There was, like, a handful of websites that would show you basically a Google Map route of, like, optimized to hit all 50 states, and then one that was just like all of the good one, like good spots that would do like a 50 state.
None of the shitty states.
You kind of dip into.
You have to put who you voted for president, and sure, it recommends the good states.
Exactly. But basically, like two optimized routes for road trips, basically. And so I was thinking about going on a road trip, and looked up those maps and realized that the person who does it, this guy Randall Olson, who's just like a quirky mathematician who does all sorts of like fun projects like that. So he did the awesome road trips, but he also wrote like an algorithm to figure out where Waldo is most of the time, stuff like that. So if you check out randallolson.com for weird, like math-based quirky projects, it's a real delight, genuinely. I'm not selling it as hard as I should have.
That's cool.
So I recommend that. And then the show Barry on HBO, I'm really, really enjoying right now. That's like incredible.
It's pretty good, especially if you hang out with actors.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. We're both married to actors, so that's helpful. But it's really awesome, and I think you can still catch up before the finale. That's great. And then my last one is making salsas at home. I've gotten really into making salsas at home. It's the summer of salsa. That's what I recommend doing.
My mom makes, she has a lot of tomato plants, so she makes a lot of salsa, and it's amazing.
It's so much better. It takes 10 minutes to do. You just need like a handful of ingredients. Make salsas at home, you guys.
But salsa is a little bit like pizza, where like the bad salsa is still pretty good.
Yeah, sure. Bad salsa is not that bad. Like paste is not that bad, but homemade salsa is totally worth making. Bobby, you got anything?
You tell me if this has already been talked about before.
Sure.
The Highland app. Are you familiar with Highland?
Oh, have we talked about Highland? Yeah, we did. Okay. It's still great. Tell us why you like it.
Yeah. I don't know if we've ever endorsed it. We've mentioned it.
Sam Reich.
He endorsed it?
New York guy. Yeah, yeah.
It's these New York guys with their apps.
Yeah. It's like more fit for New York writers. It's like, if you're kind of pretentious, you don't want to sell out with Final Draft.
Well, the thing is you eventually work in... It's really for first drafts. Yeah. And it's like, it gets your head out of thinking about formatting, you know, screenplays. So I really like it for first drafts because you're kind of free in a weird way because you're not... the editor brain is getting taken out of it and you're just like... Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's just brain vomit. And then it gets sort of... into a screenplay format.
Yeah.
I should try. I have it. I bought it because it lets you reverse PDFs. So you can take a PDF of a script and turn it into a final draft file.
And I've been using the Highland 2 beta.
Oh.
And it's dope.
Well, oh.
And it has a little timer on it now. So like say you're like, I need to do 6 pages a day or whatever it is, it'll just kind of keep track.
Yo, how did you get into that beta?
I think anyone can.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's I just got an email that's like, we just got accepted to the App Store. It's going to be like out to the world soon. So
oh, man, I'm very excited.
Highland
about
2
that.
Is definitely a step above Highland 1, yeah.
And will it cost money to upgrade?
I don't know. I think he charges like $5 or $10 or something like that. I know, what right?
Jerk. He already has a hit podcast. Now he wants money. Speaking of which, you guys should check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/justshootitpod. But seriously, my endorsement is, I read this article, and we'll post it. It's a really short article, but it's about A Quiet Place. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yeah.
It's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's about these aliens that have supersonic hearing, and if you make any noise, they will come and kill you. And so it's about this family. They have a deaf daughter. So they're speaking in sign language. So they're kind of one of these few families that have survived because they know how to communicate silently. And it's the article is an interview with the writers talking about how they came up with it. They were like really inspired by like Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin and all these silent films. And they wanted to see if they can find a mechanism to make a modern day silent film. And this was like their idea. And I think anyone watching it's like, it's so simple. It's so good. It's so well done. It made a ton of money. Like, I wish I would have written that. But they talk about how they pitched it for, like, 7 years, and every producer is like, it's just such a gimmick. It's, like, so gimmicky. Like, why? It's interesting, but no, not it's not enough. And, like, I don't know. I just, like, love reading those articles because every great movie, you know, everyone has said no to for, like, 7 years.
And you know what also is interesting? Did you peek at that script that they posted? It's, like, it's very short. I want to say it's like 45 pages long, and it chops up the script in like different fonts and stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
It's interesting.
I didn't peek at it, but they talk about that in the article. We'll put the article on the website because they were trying to communicate sound. Like if somebody steps on crackling leaves or something, it's like such a big deal in that world.
It's like a little comic booky almost.
So they'll make a whole page where it's like crunch, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just in the middle of the page and then the next page. I didn't see it, but you did. Bobby,
yeah, yeah.
So anyway, we'll put, I think there might be a link to that. And they also made a short based on the movie before, like John Krasinski got involved and stuff. So I don't know. It's just nice to see that even these like kind of smash hits out of nowhere, like
have a journey.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just that when somebody tells you your idea is bad, like no, everyone's been told that, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's good to hear that. So cool. Well, we have a question for our listeners again. We've been asking questions every week. This week we are asking, what is your favorite film-related book? I think probably one of our very first unpaid endorsements was Rebel Without a Crew, the Robert Rodriguez book, which kind of dates this podcast a little bit. I feel like we haven't talked about that book for a really long time.
But that's true.
There have been a lot of really great books that we've heard recently. The Disaster Artist.
I'm going to stick by Understanding Comics as my favorite.
Oh my God. I read that one that Matt recommended and I barely made it through.
Well, everyone, you can read that book and then tell Oren that he is woefully wrong. It's incredible. Yeah. So good. Weigh in. Let us know what your favorite filmmaking book is.
Let us know. Email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com or tweet at us at justshootitpod and we will talk about our favorite answers.
We do have an answer. Oren, a few episodes ago, you asked what other things people should be carrying in their car as filmmakers. And John Finger wrote in, he said, a 10-foot woven charging cable, which I like because they're a little bit more durable than your regular like plastic-coated ones. A 10-footer, he's constantly happy he has it. And he thinks that a 3-pack was $12.
Yeah. I mean, I guess 10 feet, it seems like a little bit of an overkill, but if you're like a limo driver and like the person in the back seat's like, hey, can you plug me in?
Hey, man.
10 feet's perfect.
You can sit on the couch and still plug your phone in. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It fits in his jacket pocket. So thanks, John.
Thanks.
And let us know on Facebook and everywhere else what's your favorite filmmaking book is.
So we'd love to hear your feedback on this episode. If you have any questions, comments, please email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Twitter. We're at justshootitpod, or Instagram. We're at justshootitpod. We're also on Facebook. And we'd love
learn all the things.
An iTunes review if you get a chance. It was really helpful for us and to help people find us. You can follow me at Smitey Pyleg.
And me at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And if we want to follow you, are you on Twitter or Instagram or anything?
What's this? No, yeah, I'm on all those things. Bobby Miller, I got in early on Twitter.
Nice.
Nice.
Just Google me. I'm all over the place. There's no, it's not hard to contact me.
But is it?
You're an open book.
You have kind of a name that seems like it would be hard to Google. Is that not true?
I pop up.
You're the Bobby Miller.
I've been working it for a while.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Our music was provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. This episode was edited by Jay McAuliffe. Our webmaster is Ewan Williams. And our producer is Madeline Rosewatt. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.